I think the origin was Nixon and Kennedy, right? That was the first really well-known presidential debate that most of people watched. Right. They were looking for compelling programming on TV at that point. That's what they wanted.
That's a good point. But there were, of course, there were two of them, right?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if these... That debate is not 10.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
going to be my first thing.
Yeah. Well, debate originally it was 30, right? It was 30.
I mean...
That's how many were running, but they had 10 on the stage.
Yeah.
Right, that's 10 right. per debate.
And that was kind of weird, too, because I would argue it was under 15, and he's not even there tonight. You know, I mean, it's weird.
People can introduce themselves as they like or not, but a bunch of us are sitting around here at Solidarity House and watched the debates yesterday, the debate yesterday, the one debate with 10 people, is, which, as has already been said, is an unorthodox format for a debate, to say the least. So I was going to say that the two winners of the debate were first... Bernie's throat won the debate because he overcame the crooked, this is from a friend of mine, a shitpost of a friend of mine, that he overcame the crooked DNC denial of a glass of water. So you go on.
He definitely sounded froggy last night. Yeah,
froggy for sure. The second winner of the debate is Joe Biden's Schrodinger's public option buy-in, not buy-in. I think that that won the debate, and I think that it should be called Schrodinger's buy-in, not buy-in. Who else wants to weigh in on who they think did well in the debate, seriously or funny?
Well, I actually think almost everyone did well in the debate last night, and I'm going to say with the exception of Joe Biden. Like, I and folks know that I don't love Joe Biden in general. But it just feels like he's coming apart at the seams half of the time he's speaking, and just his perpetual referencing back to "I was Barack Obama's buddy" is super irritating. Like, several of them have like their soapbox they get up on regularly, but that's Biden's, and it's just weak, you know.
Yeah, a little bit of defense.
I need to stop.
Pretty much since you two started talking about debate in general, I think is where we started. Yeah. Okay. So the defense of Biden.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ready?
I don't know if I would ever be ready because I don't think there's anything, but that is defensible about Joe Biden. But you know, it's not my.
Well, I disagree.
It's not my forum.
I would have to defend Joe Biden in one sense. And that it seems like a lot of big waves were hitting him. And it's like everybody, because he's the one who's rating, you know, polling the best lately. And so I think quite a few people, you know, they kind of had it out for him. And that's only natural. I can understand why they would do that. But I'm just sick of this thing of Democrats bashing one another. And also, I think Biden, by far, has the most political experience up there. There's no doubt about that. And also, he is somewhat realistic when it comes to money. And I think that is often ignored by a lot of people. Healthcare is the one area that I agree. I actually agree with Biden. Everything else, I kind of disagree with.
Yeah. So what do you think is realistic about, I mean, I feel like...
I don't know that we, honestly, I think that goes down a rabbit hole that is very different than what we wanted to talk about in the debates. And I think that I respectfully disagree with pretty much everything that you're saying, but I also haven't heard your reasons yet. So I don't want to be like, you may have, I don't want to, you know.
Yeah, no, thank you.
But I want to talk more about the debate than about those positions. So
at one point, Biden said to Bernie, you know, it can't be your way or the highway. I mean, people in America want a choice. They demand a choice. It's what they're used to. And I think that ultimately a sort of public in something like Obamacare will eventually win the day because there's an economic incentive there. Americans love an economic incentive. So even if private insurance can be allowed for a while, I think we should allow it to exist, and it'll eventually phase itself out.
I think that was the argument. I don't remember if it was Buttigieg. Somebody was making that argument, basically. Yes. Like if you're right, and it's really going to be that much better, then it will phase itself out. And I think that they're like that might be possible, but I also think that what we've seen historically is that when you have a sort of capitalist option and a socialist option operating next to each other, that often the capitalist option eats the socialist option and it ends up kind of going away. Like if, you know, those insurance companies, if they still exist, are still going to have incredible lobbying power and are still going to have incredible influence over our decision makers. And that's how we ended up in the state that we're in right now in terms of healthcare in general in the US. And so I don't really see a path where like it's a level playing field, you know, because the public option isn't going to have lobbyists the way that the private insurers are still going to have lobbyists. And I think unless we like radically alter how decision making is made and how much corporations are able to buy politicians, then it seems inevitable that it will continue to lean to the right. And so I'd rather go as far left as we can and, you know, see if we can plant a flag in a place that has a little more immunity to that kind of political influence.
So Tom and I were talking about this healthcare point at the debate last night, and I know it's not what you expected that this would be about, mm-hmm. but the healthcare was the beginning of the debate.
It was. It in so many ways has defined mm-hmm. the election and
yep.
played a predominant role in this debate.
Yeah. So I'll just say what I said to Tom when he brought these points up to me in the first place. The idea that Americans want choice is a sort of argument that says that what popular will decides even is necessarily what's best for all of us. I'm not sure that this is the consistent principle of all of law or American mm-hmm. policy. The government makes decisions at times to try to do things to protect public health, for example, speed limits, let's say.
Yeah.
Should we want the American public to make decisions that determine that lots and lots and lots of people in this country won't be covered for healthcare because that's what most people want? I don't necessarily think that the will of the majority is the most important thing here. I think that providing yeah. medical care for uh-huh. most people is probably what's most important.
Also, I think it's a fallacy that most people don't want, or that like plays into the idea that most people don't want Medicare for all, and that's actually been disproven by a lot of polls, right? Mm-hmm. The majority mm-hmm. of Americans do want Medicare exactly. for all. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the choice thing feels to me like a red herring, too. It's like, what is more choice than you can go to any doctor to get your yeah. coverage,
you
and
don't
you can
have to clear
any
it.
Job, yeah. and you can get out of abusive relationships, and you can be an independent contractor. Like, how much? I mean, to me, like Medicare
so
is like
the
ultimate
what
choice.
What if the argument is that the public option would give you all of those things? Like, you could have all of those things in mm-hmm. the public option.
Mm-hmm.
At least what Biden seems to be promising, whether that means that you buy in or buy out, which in itself could have meant many, many different things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that he knew what they all meant, but there's many ways to opt in and opt out of, mm-hmm. of a system, especially a service system, right? Could pay for it or not. Mm-hmm. It could be a tax thing. You know, it could be like subsidies are now.
Mm-hmm.
It could simply be a robust version of that. Like, it could be any of those things. What if that could get you all of those things? Would we still need, Medicare for all if there was a way to have public and private insurance? I think is to me cuts to the heart of that question.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Okay. I just don't yeah. understand the value Anybody? Of like what is. So yeah, we have the public option, right? And that, like you said, it gives us everything that Jan was talking about. But then what's even the value of having that private insurance?
It clearly doesn't give you everything, because
well,
then
right.
you can get premium things if you have more money.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Like, but what's even like the value, though, of like the private insurance, other than to make money for the private insurance companies and shareholders.
To maximize choice, which Americans presume.
Rich people won't fight against the system if you give them the option to have extra stuff other people don't have.
Because they want to feel superior.
They want to live longer. You know, who doesn't want to live longer? Fair. Mm-hmm. Right? And that is my objection to having a public and private together, mm-hmm. is that it means it's a world where some people get to fucking live longer than other people.
Right. Because they have more money.
To me, that's
immoral.
Foundationally immoral and unfair. Like, it's not even, I don't even arrive to that from some like scientific Marxist dialectical materialist point of view. It's just fucking wrong to live in a world where rich people get to buy more life but you know, again, I mm-hmm. recognize that doesn't cut to the question of whether or not it's realistic to, you know, to have one system, you know, in the transition to another system, seems to be your position.
Let's talk about two pragmatic things. Number one, Obamacare is already up and running. Okay, what Biden seems to be promoting is an expansion and improvement of that very thing. Okay, I have Obamacare, and I do call it Obamacare, by the way.
Same.
I do not want to call it the ACA, although that's fine, I don't care. But so it's already up and running, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel if all we're doing is improving it and expanding it. Also, we have to think about money at some point. It seems that Bernie Sanders' plan in particular would just simply be a lot of money. I mean, it would, you know, at some point, you have to think, even though one thing is better than another, okay, if the thing that you really want is so outrageously expensive, I'm sorry, but you just can't have it, you know. And I would add a third pragmatic thing, is that I think that what we have to do is look at a lot more preventative medicine and look at the things that make people sick, like junk food, for instance. Those are the things that we can do, and we're already doing to a point. We just need to do more of it. That's all.
So, Tom, what do you do with the economist after economist after economist who has studied the plans and has said Bernie Sanders' plan is actually the least expensive way for all of us to get our healthcare needs met? I mean, do you just think that the economists are wrong?
Their argument is that it's going to cost a lot of money in the short run. And they're right. It's going to cost a tremendous amount of money in the short run.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is going to save money both, you know, in mass and individually, mm-hmm. in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And lives.
And to me, I think those things are probably both true.
Mm-hmm.
Surely we spend equivalent amounts of money on other things historically, yes. that we have found to be a matter of public crisis.
The like, space age, the military, and so forth. Yeah, you're absolutely quite right. I don't know. I have to admit that I have not looked at the different plans all that carefully and specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But a fourth pragmatic thing is that the most experienced politician up there by far is Joe Biden. Okay.
Is that true?
He does.
I don't know if
has
that's
he been
true.
There longer than Bernie?
Yeah.
Why is experience important? Well, I mean, a lot of people are experienced doing bad things.
Right, yeah. Like, your experience's drive has driven us into how many?
We evaluate your record, not measure it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
Well, these are all very good points.
I think that the Democratic base is very fired up about big ideas and wanting to do big systemic things. And to me, and this is, I think, was proof, you know, last night, you know, this notion that Democrats only care about beating Donald Trump, I just don't think is true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I don't like to give a lot of credit to, you know, to the Democratic Party institutionally, but I feel like the base, and certainly people that I've talked to, you know, feel like this is also an opportunity for us to, you know, maybe change politics in such a way that we make it less likely that Trump gets elected in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one narrative. Now, the Biden narrative is the opposite of that. It says, we need the person up there that pragmatically is most likely, you know, to prevail.
Related to what you're saying.
Yeah.
And which I think you're saying it. Anyway, I'm not sure, but
I don't know if that's true. Yeah.
The if what we really want to do is bump Trump, okay, get rid of him, I think we have to consider which candidate up there was the most electable. Okay. And so which one would appeal to the middle and a little bit of the right? Okay, these are important factors. It's pragmatic. It's not what we'd like, maybe, but yes, Jeff.
The electability point is another point that I raised at the debate last night, and this is a sort of my comfortable zone of discussing presidential politics. I've said for the last few months, I think the ideal ticket for electability is some combination of Sanders and Warren. Mm-hmm. And this was a point I raised to you last night as well. Now, let me just explain the reasoning behind this. I think Sanders' support comes from younger voters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You need younger voters to turn out in order to have a plurality on the Democratic side. And we need more than a majority. We need a plurality because vote rigging and election gerrymandering and all those things, it's not only the president that's important, but the Congress as well. We have to flip the House. We have to flip the Senate. We have to flip the White House. So we need young voters in order to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Warren is going to pull in the Clinton voters.
Yeah.
They're not all that different. And Hillary, let's remember, she wasn't the perfect candidate like you're talking about. She was a compromise for many, many, many reasons, but she won more votes than Trump. Mm-hmm. So if winning votes is the goal, and you put those two on the ticket, you're going to get more than relatively affluent, relatively uneducated white men who provided Trump his base. So that's the electability argument. I don't think Biden's more electable.
Related to that, I think in 2016... Yeah, youth really liked Bernie Sanders, okay? But we're going into 2020. It's quite a different thing. He's 4 years older, okay? I mean, I love the man. Okay?
Yeah, the youths still like Bernie Sanders. Right. That's I don't think it matters.
Right now. Today, right now.
Are you a betting?
I am not a better.
How would you like to know what, you know, Biden polls in the single digits for with people under 50.
Under 50.
I'm not sure that polling is all that reliable. Remember, 2016, Hillary was going to win.
But how do you even make an electability argument if you disregard polls?
Yeah. How would you make any arguments at all?
Well, and he's also run for president how many times, and he's never been elected. So it's like, I just don't get the electability thing with Biden from pretty much any angle.
I also feel like he could very quickly break down. He could have a complete and total system breakdown after the nomination. He could have it 2 weeks before the election. Well, he could get up and start saying, I actually like the darkies, and I've worn blackface, and what's wrong with blackface? And some of my best friends wear blackface, and you better shut up. And
you could start, to you know, let me try to sound like he could have a degree. The electability argument for Biden at its strongest says Obama won two terms. Obama was a popular president, and everyone associates Biden with Obama, including lots of voters. Okay? Mm-hmm. The question is, do we want a return to Obama even if we win?
No.
Was Obama all that much better on immigration than Trump? Was Obama all that much better on war and terrorism than Trump? Was Obama better on the military budget than Trump? I don't think any of those things is true. The only thing I think Obama was better on than Trump was climate change, but Obama was the one who watered down the Paris Accord so that it would be non-compulsory. The other nations were ready to go for compulsory. I think China would have gone for compulsory, but the U.S. were the people who put the wall in the way. So if we like Biden to be elected because he's like Obama or will carry the Obama constituency or whatever, he's going to implement the same policies as Obama, we are still screwed. That's not good enough.
Yeah. So I wonder
out that those are the two competing narratives
right.
of the two sort of sides mm-hmm. in the Democratic primary is on the one hand, must be mm-hmm. Trump. On the other hand, no, we can't, there's things we can't afford to do now, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of climate and other things that
right? That it is, as Tom says, it's not 2016 anymore, it's 2020, and we're that much further down the road of urgency around climate disruption and around the economy, too. I mean, I think there's a tremendous amount of concerns about where Trump has gotten us economically, and he started out with already neoliberalism having gotten like its hooks into the American economy really intensely. And that is not about Trump, but what he's done with it has, you know, tanked things. And nobody on the stage last night is running on, I don't think we should try to beat Trump. So I'm not sure that that's like the most important thing for us to be focusing on. And I'd love to talk about some of the other candidates too. Like, it wasn't just Sanders, Warren, and Biden there last night. There were like seven other people.
Right. Right. And I was going to say, as like the young Democrat in the crowd, I think going back to the point that the youth are really behind Bernie still definitely has some validity. But I also think that, yeah, given the range of other candidates that have now put their name out and also have equally as progressive, maybe not equally as progressive, but also have these left-leaning ideas about, you know, specific issues like climate change that young people are really paying attention to. A lot of them, I think, got kind of interested in politics with like the Bernie campaign and then have widened.
Now they're a little more discerning.
Yeah. Who do you think are the more interesting candidates up there, Michaela? You know, as our youngest member in the conversation.
I mean, I think interesting is like a different word than, of course, just like best or most compelling. I've got to say, Yang is like the most interesting to me. I think he's there like not just to like run for president. He's there to be interesting. And so I think that's why like... he's like an interesting one, just to talk about. And I think...
Why do you think that Yang has done better than a bunch of experienced candidates? He's polling better than, all the folks that weren't there tonight, some of whom,
except for Gabbard, held
public office and things like that, and higher than some of the folks that were there, I think, right? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is like, the drive that got Trump elected, the drive that people want something fresh and interesting, and they're just fed up with the current, non-establishment. Quote, quote. But on the other side of things, I think people that want to see change and that see that the world is moving quite fast and don't, and that they hear the promise from Yang that the world could be radically different, and that that a lot of it could be organized quickly to a much different society than the one that we're living in, I think there's some validity behind that.
Also, he was on the Joe Rogan show. So,
well, as was Bernie.
Yeah, he's also like a funny guy. So as Trevor Noah. Yeah.
No, he is, and he also, I noticed that he said something that many people found very embarrassing last night, and it will surely be the topic of discussion, which
he said,
is,
I'm Asian, he said, so I'm Asian, so I know a lot of doctors. And
of course, a bunch of people on Twitter and shit were like, ouch, ooh, that's really bad. And I was like, I know people in that generation, student, and sort of I know the ironic humor from which that comes.
Right.
And I get that he didn't mean that in any way that was meant to be derogatory. It might have been extremely insensitive.
In poor taste.
And sort of, and it raises all sorts of questions about self-stereotypes and different things like that. But I feel like that irony is somewhat related to his appeal with the people that he appeals to, which is a very specific kind of, I don't know, I find academic / entrepreneurial / Reddit gang, tech, people who like their devices, who like their apps. I totally get that that's what he's appealing to, and he's done a reasonably good job of doing that.
I'd like to twist the conversation a little bit to talk about some good old-fashioned geography in terms of a ticket. And what I mean by a ticket is, you know, we're not only talking about potential president here, but a vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to throw out there that what I'm talking about is nothing new. Okay, problem with Bernie and Elizabeth Warren is there are two New Englanders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot of people around America resent that. A lot of
yeah.
And whether or not we like that or not, it happens to be true. And I would like to propose right now a ticket of Beto O'Rourke as vice president and Joe Biden for president. And anybody want to argue with that?
Before.
Can I go vomit first?
While Sarah is vomiting, I would like to give kudos to Beto.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing it on fucking tape, and I am. It's and for the world for the world to hear. It's not tape. I just called this digital thing tape. If I were assigning speaker points to last night's debate rather than simply saying won or lost, I think that I would have given a 29.5 to Beto, and only some people will get that reference, but it is almost perfect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but
I
that's...
feel like his speaking was, he is, mm-hmm. he was, no, I'm just being rhetoric guy.
Yeah, yeah.
he was eloquent and passionate about race in a way that no other candidate in the race, of any race, has been, and I
Castro was on it last night, too, as far as race goes. I would say, and I don't like any of them as candidates particularly, but I think Beto and Cory Booker and Amy Klobuchar all were really, really good last night.
That reminds me of when you stood up for Klobuchar last night on social media or wherever it was that you did. I said, that's because you're the Amy Klobuchar of socialism.
Because we're both Midwestern.
Because you're both from, because you're born in the upper Midwest.
Socialist.
And you've got
that's
that
geography.
Certainly
right,
not in. I'm not talking about policy in any way, shape, or form.
No.
I'm definitely saying.
I liked her at the end of it last night. I liked her. I don't want her to be the president, but I actually liked her.
Yeah.
You know,
she's
I mean, to me,
she made you forget about that time that she made a staff for Shave Her Legs.
She
I don't like every shit in her staff.
You did not see any flying staplers.
Right, no flying staplers.
No,
well, and you know, and all of that said, I mean, to me, the person who jumped in terms of my esteem last night was Julian Castro. Like
I would
you
agree.
Know, I really appreciated a
maybe
lot of what he had
road.
To say.
Yeah.
Well, and I could even see him. I mean, I think he would be a fine choice for a vice presidential.
Solve the geography
candidate.
Problem.
Right. And the white people problem.
Right.
Well, that.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. White people problem goes a little deeper than just
well,
white.
No.
That's fair.
Fair.
But that is like the main downside
besides
geography, to like a Biden war.
I have
to
every single thing that I
hear. If you're openly denigrating the white people problem, as you call it, I don't think that's a very ingenious way to go about it. They are going to have to be part of the solution.
Certainly.
Can't
well,
blaming them as the problem.
So we're talking about putting people on the ticket, though, and I think that would be fabulous to have.
Yeah, I think a multiracial ticket
a,
as is important as a multi-geography
ticket. Let me take
you know?
A moment to address that, though, because this was another issue that came up. Let's say we got our way and Warren wins. Let's say, for example, okay, we have a progressive candidate. Now she has a choice between picking Bernie as her running mate, or she has a choice between picking Castro as her running mate.
Yeah.
Is Castro going to get enough Latin votes on basis of identity politics to offset the young voters that are not necessarily going to turn out?
Well, it's not just that. He's also, we saw Chops last night.
I hope so.
I hope.
But it's
right.
not just about his race. I mean, I'm not saying put him on there because he's a
right.
person of color.
His race is just as important as...
As geography.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And he's
from Texas, right?
Right. And he's from Texas. I mean, I think that there are, and I don't actually think we should be making decisions based on either geography or race. I think that Castro has, I mean, so he is one of the few candidates up there. I mean, there's four candidates, I think, up there who actually have working class background. So there's Booker, Castro, Warren, and Sanders. So these are the people who actually have some lived experience with working class issues. And he and Booker also have experience being people of color in this country. That is important. It colors things in ways that that I don't think that white people and people who were raised middle class necessarily have the perspective on. And so there's that. And I also, like, he showed some steel last night. And I know that some people don't like how he went after Biden, and others who are really fucking tired of older white men running the world, older middle class, upper class white men running the world. Like, we're fucking cheering last night. We're like, yeah, really happy to see him, like, calmly, directly, and with some passion get in there and go, like, no, like, you don't get to spin your record as this. You don't get to say stuff that's off and get away with it. And, like, that's what I've always liked about Kamala Harris. And I'm less impressed with her as a candidate now and more impressed with him. But they've both got that, like, no bullshit thing going on. And, you know, and he's also, like, you know, he's been in politics for a long time. And
he's in the administration.
He was in the administration. His mother is an organizer. Like, he grew up in a family that gets organizing. Yeah. And that's part of why Barack Obama did really well and was really appealing, is that he was an organizer fundamentally. Castro is an organizer fundamentally. And that's the way that I see him being more in Obama's lineage than Biden is that they come from a similar background in terms of, like, how they put the world together and how they think about organizing people. I think that Booker, I don't actually know enough about his background, but I think he was trying to talk like an organizer last night. And I think that's because there's other people trying to, like, connect themselves to Obama's legacy. But I think Castro is the one who is the closest to the good things about Obama's legacy. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think that he would be a good vice presidential choice for either Sanders or Warren. So that's my case for Castro.
As a matter of housekeeping, we've already gone 32 minutes, 33 as of now.
Okay.
It isn't okay because I need to leave.
Okay.
So concluding statements would be great. And mine is just that I don't think that there's any utility for or desire for Bernie to be a VP in the VP slot.
He should stay in the Senate.
I don't think that that promotes his agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that promotes the agenda of his movement.
Mm-hmm.
And he's better off in the Senate in that way. Actually, that's all I wanted to say. Closing statement?
I think, I was particularly moved by Klobuchar last night as well. Taking it back to the geography thing. So that's where I ended up casting my little vote, just based on the debate. I think you guys brought up a lot of good points, though. I think there's many, many good candidates out there, and we'll just see how it plays out.
So as we were saying, it's hard to say who won a 10-person debate.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say who won a 4-team debate. It's much easier to say who won a 2-person debate. But if I had to give a winner for last night's debate, it would probably be Castro. He's the one who raised my estimation of him more than any of the other candidates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought you're right. I thought our work is passionate, but I don't think the American public is going to decide this election based on guns. And that's what our work has right now. He's staked his candidacy on El Paso, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck to him. I hope in the future what the Democratic Party is going to do is to try to continue to narrow down the debate stage. Maybe an unpopular view, but I find it very difficult to pay attention to that many points of view at a very superficial level.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather pay attention to a few points of view at a deeper level. If that's what we're moving toward, that's a good idea. But if not, I think the debates will continue to be probably pretty irrelevant to the outcome of the election.
I think that it's worth noting that, like, that's what the DNC wants. The DNC has no motivation to narrow the field, right? Like, they don't want a debate of a conversation about policy between Warren and Bernie and Biden. Like, that's against their best interest in terms of keeping control of the Democratic Party and, you know, and keeping the establishment in power.
Yes. This conversation should in no way be seen as an endorsement of the DNC.
Okay,
truth.
I just want to talk about the synergy that can exist in a relationship, because we're no longer really just talking about electing a president, but a president and a vice president. And I'd like to turn this very briefly to the old movie, The Karate Kid. Okay, and what was there going on there in that relationship? You had an old man with worldly experience, and you had a young man, right? And I can see that as being a very workable, realistic thing. So if we elect for president a man who, or a woman, who promises to die by 2023, and they elect, okay, so what I'm getting at here, this is my argument for a ticket, that would be either Biden and Beto O'Rourke, or Biden and Julian Castro. And that's all I would like listeners here to think about, is what would the synergy look like? I think the president should be older, and I think the vice president should be obviously younger. That's all.
Wax on.
Wax off.
All right. Cool.
Podcast on. Podcast.
Michaela, did you?
Yep.
Yana,
you didn't have a closing.
Yeah.
My closing. Sanders Castro 2020. I'm planting my flag in the ground. And Warren is like the president of the Senate.
That's a good combination.
Yep.